I'm Homer, the blind brother. I didn't lose my sight all at once. It was like the movies, a slow fade out. When I was told what was happening, I was interested to measure it. I was in my late teens then, keen on everything. What I did this particular winter was to stand back from the lake in Central Park, where they did all their ice skating, and see what I could see and couldn't see, as a day-by-day thing. The houses over to Central Park West went first. They got darker, as if dissolving into the dark sky, until I couldn't make them out. And then the trees began to lose their shape. And then finally, this was toward the end of the season, maybe it was late February of that very cold winter, and all I could see were these phantom shapes of the ice skaters floating past me on a field of ice. And then the white ice, that last light, went gray, and then altogether black. And then all my sight was gone. Though I could hear clearly the scoot-scut of the blades on the ice, a very satisfying sound, a soft sound, though full of intention, a deeper tone than you'd expect made by the skate blades, perhaps for having sounded the resonant basso of the water under the ice. Scoot, scut. Scoot, scut. I would hear someone going someplace fast, and then the twirl into that long scratch as the skater spun to a stop. And then I laughed, too, for the joy of that ability of the skater to come to a dead stop all at once, going along scoot-scut, and then scratch. Of course, I was sad, too, but it was lucky this happened to me when I was so young, with no idea of being disabled, moving on in my mind to my other capacities, like my exceptional hearing, which I trained to a degree of alertness that was almost visual. Langley said I had ears like a bat, and he tested that proposition as he liked to subject everything to review. I was, of course, familiar with our house, all four stories of it, and could navigate every room and up and down the stairs without hesitation, knowing where everything was by memory. I knew the drawing room, our father's study, our mother's sitting room, the dining room with its 18 chairs and the walnut long table, the butler's pantry and the kitchens, the parlor, the bedrooms. I remembered how many of the carpeted steps there were between the floors. I didn't even have to hold on to the railing. You could watch me, and if you didn't know me, you wouldn't know my eyes were dead. But Langley said the true test of my hearing capacity would come when no memory was involved, so he shifted things around a bit, taking me into the music room where he had earlier rolled the grand piano around to a different corner and had put the Japanese folding screen with the herons in water in the middle of the room, and for good measure twirled me around in the doorway till my entire sense of direction was obliterated. And I had to laugh. Because, don't you know, I walked right around that folding screen and sat down at the piano exactly as if I knew where he had put it, as I did. I could hear surfaces. And I said to Langley, "A blind bat whistles. That's the way he does it. But I didn't have to whistle, did I?" He was truly amazed. Langley is the older of us by 2 years. And I have always liked to impress him in whatever way I could. At this time, he was already a college student in his first year at Columbia. "How do you do it?" he said. "This is of scientific interest." I said, "I feel shapes as they push the air away, or I feel heat from things. You can turn me around till I'm dizzy, but I can still tell where the air is filled in with something solid." And there were other compensations as well. I had tutors for my education, and then, of course, I was comfortably enrolled in the West End Conservatory of Music, where I had been a student since my sighted years. My skill as a pianist rendered my blindness acceptable in the social world. As I grew older, people spoke of my gallantry, and the girls certainly liked me. In our New York society of those days, one parental means of ensuring a daughter's marriage to a suitable husband was to warn her, from birth it seemed, to watch out for men, and to not quite trust them. This was well before the Great War, when the days of the flapper and women smoking cigarettes and drinking martinis were in the unimaginable future. So a handsome young blind man of reputable family was particularly attractive, insofar as he could not, even in secret, do anything untoward. His helplessness was very alluring to a woman trained since birth herself to be helpless. It made her feel strong, in command. It could bring out her sense of pity. It could do lots of things, my sightlessness. She could express herself, give herself to her pent-up feelings, as she could not safely do with a normal fellow. I dressed very well. I could shave myself with my straight razor and never nick the skin, and at my instructions the barber kept my hair a bit longer than it was being worn in that day, so that when at some gathering I sat at the piano and played the Appassionata, for instance, or the Revolutionary Etude, my hair would fly about. I had a lot of it then, a good thick mop of brown hair parted in the middle and coming down each side of my head. Franz Liszt-ian hair is what it was. And if we were sitting on a sofa and no one was about, a young lady friend might kiss me, touch my face and kiss me. And I, being blind, could put my hand on her thigh, without seeming to have that intention, and so she might gasp, but would leave it there, for fear of embarrassing me.